sizzling human on gay Bigfoot action.
Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always joined by the man who will be replacing Nicki Minaj at the Jeddah World Fest concert in Saudi Arabia, Brian. Brian, how the hell are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Ron. I'm nervous.
You're nervous? Why is that? Well,
I've never done a solo headlining show. It's always been a dream of mine. I always thought that it was going to be a small coffee shop in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. I thought that maybe it was going to be a slam poetry show on a Sunday night on the Lower East Side. I never thought that the first time I was going to take the stage was at the Jeddah Cup in 2019 in Saudi Arabia, where I was going to perform for the man that masterminded Adnan Khashoggi's murder, His Royal Highness Bim Salabim.
I mean, you never, you don't shy away from things. You don't feel that you can be too controversial. And that's one of the things I respect about you.
Well, I would say it's really you want to make sure that you've stepped up to the plate and had a chance to swing, rather than have spent your whole life sitting on the bench watching others score, make outs, succeed, catch balls, which reminds me of this time when I was in a bar in Chelsea back in 1994. But that's a tangent.
That's a story for another podcast.
Sure.
All right. Well, let's get things rolling here today with Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week.
And once again, not even a close contest this week. The tiramisu shot taking out the kamikaze shot, 88% to 12%. Maybe possibly a result of some biased poll setting up, but regardless, tiramisu running away with it. Brian, your thoughts on this week's drink?
Ron, this clearly was a vote for America. This is not, you know, when we suggested last week, let's do vodka shots. It's, you know, there was a whole wide range of options that we had open to us. I was a little surprised when you mentioned the kamikaze. It's a word that a lot of us who were alive back on December 7th, 1941, we don't throw that word around. It hurts. It brings a searing pain into our memories. It was one of the darkest days that this country has ever experienced. And for your generation to be tossing that word lightly as if it's something fun that you can mix lime juice with vodka and become a woo-woo girl at the local bar, that's not the word. It's not what I think of when I think of the word kamikaze. We lost a lot of young men. We lost a lot of young women. Cuba Gooding Jr. had to man a machine gun that day. Ben Affleck literally just had enough time to tell Liv Tyler that he was going to go onto an asteroid and save the Earth. I mean, literally, Pearl Harbor is just such an important moment that I was shocked. I was shocked that that more people did not vote for tiramisu. I frankly was very disappointed that you went with the pro-land of the rising sun, pro-Emperor Hirohito. The kamikaze was just not something that I ever thought you would be on board with.
I certainly didn't mean to disrespect you. And as always, thank you for your service. A lot of people don't realize you are in your late 80s, but... You know, I understand what you're coming from. And actually, I've already done one of these shots just to test it out. Right. Very delicious. There's a really? Photo of it up on our Instagram page in one of our brand spanking new Ron and Brian podcast shot glasses. So the recipe we used this week for the tiramisu shot, basically it's some vodka, Kahlua, Bailey's Irish Cream, and then a little whipped cream and cocoa powder on top to finish it off. Fresh homemade whipped cream. We both whipped that cream pretty damn good, didn't we? Oh, that's a pretty impressive looking one.
It was good.
All right, I've already done one. Why don't you throw back your shot? Tell me how you like it. And there it goes down the hatch. Nice and sweet. He's puckering a little bit. And survey says, rinsing around in the mouth, cleansing the palate, licking his fingers.
Utterly delicious.
Yes.
I can't say that it does actually taste like tiramisu.
It does. If you don't mind, I'm going to finish my second one here.
Please feel free to. What was interesting was, you said that your recipe called for Kahlua.
Well, liqueur, I should say.
Is Kahlua considered a coffee liqueur?
In this house, it is.
Why did my voice just go up four notches? That's also because, despite being 81, I am just entering puberty for the very first time. You know, they've written about me in medical journals, just like Lefty from Mulberry Street. I actually found that I had a bottle of straight up Patron coffee liqueur.
Oh, interesting.
So I think I went a little bougier on the alcohol, though you had the cocoa powder.
I did do the cocoa powder.
I was a little surprised that you would think that I would put cocoa powder on my whipped cream.
It was part of the recipe.
All things, were you not paying attention in episode 36 when I discussed why I don't mess with cocoa powder?
You'll have to refresh my memory.
I was 17. I was a camp counselor. It was Camp Breckenridge. We were just setting up all the cabins, and the man that ran the camp that summer, Captain Lou, he entered the cabin as I was dusting the floor. And he told me to get on my hands and knees, and then he just sprayed cocoa powder all over me and was videotaping it. So I don't know what he used that videotape for, but it's floating around. That's why I don't mess with cocoa butter. It's just very traumatic to me.
Fair enough. This drink also requires you to kind of pour the Bailey's over the back of a spoon into the glass. We had another drink like that a few weeks back. I have yet to master the mechanics of that, and I just end up getting the Bailey's like all over the counter.
Well, I don't believe that I was holding the spoon above the shot glass, because when I was pouring the Bailey's, I didn't actually see it causing any level of the level of color was not changing in my shot glass. And before I knew it, I looked at it and it was just all over the counter. Like, I clearly was utterly missed it. It was not my finest hour.
Little
just
issue like, with depth perception?
Just like December 7th, 1941. Not our proudest moment.
No, not at all. All right. Well, as always, if you want to give us a suggestion for Drink of the Week or a theme for Drink of the Week, head on over to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or to the website. Go to the Contact Us page, give us some suggestions, and then check out Facebook for the weekly vote. Keeping it rolling here, we're going to head on over to This Week in Racism.
This week
in
Racism.
Racism.
Racism. We had a nail biter this week. Two new competitors going up against each other came right down to the wire. But at the end, Ethan Kozak nudged out Quartz Hill High School 60% to 40%. Brian, your winning streak broken here. You felt Quartz Hill could take it. Ethan's text of racism proving to be too much. Talk to me about your loss.
Well, the last time I felt like this was on the morning of December 8th, 1941.
Really?
I woke up in my bunk in Fort Henry, and I could hear the, we had just taken the airports, and we had knocked the loyalists who felt King Henry was going to be, he was our way to go. We had just knocked them out of the airport. Anyway, to make a long story short, I woke up in my bunk and I was so filled with tears over the visual of those boats going down in Hawaii. And it just reminded me that, I can't always predict racism.
Well, hopefully you'll be a little bit better this week. Although for the first time, we had a couple of anti-racism stories. The first one was in Dallas, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta, where an African-American couple, they had hired a repairman to come on out and fix the brakes on their golf cart. As he arrived at their house, he had a pretty big Confederate flag flying off of the tailgate of his truck. So what did they do? They said, "Sorry, sir, get back in your truck and go home." And he seemed actually shocked that, that someone may have taken offense to his big-ass Confederate flag.
I would imagine if you're living in Dallas, Georgia, that you probably feel that you have the God-given right to emblazon your car with the Confederate flag. It's kind of like putting a "Don't Tread on Me" sticker. No?
And yes. And then out in Detroit, Michigan, a music festival kind of got a little controversial, got a little pushback. The Afro Future Fest was charging more for white people compared to what they were charging people of color. Trying to get across the kind of the reparation angle, but really pissed a lot of people off, and they've actually changed it back now to charging everybody the same entry fee. Brian, you think people overreacted a little bit?
No, not at all. I think that if you're pushing I think, you know, if you're going to push equality, be equal for everyone. What I'd like to know is, did they raise the prices for everyone else? Did they lower the prices for the Caucasians?
They lowered the price for whitey.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, what happens if you were a whitey and you paid the higher price? You get a refund?
I assume they'll give you some sort of a refund. Although right. what they are asking now is they've changed all tickets to a $20 general admission, and they are suggesting that if you're a non-person of color, to make a donation above and beyond that.
Oh, that's horseshit. Nah, I don't agree with that whatsoever.
I mean, I'd be more upset at the fact that they seem to be putting out a pretty lackluster lineup for a $20 general admission charge.
Do you have the lineup there?
I don't. And but, I mean, I'm just looking at some of the people that canceled, like Tiny Jag,
who
decided not to be. And they may be adding Nicki Minaj. I hear her schedule has opened up a bit.
That she does.
But so that was our anti-racism. But we did have a couple of racist instances that we looked at down in Maryland. We've got Montgomery County Police Officer Kevin Morris. He was caught on video this past week violently forcing a Hispanic teenager's head into a concrete sidewalk during an arrest. Morris was initially suspended after the video went viral and has since been charged with second-degree assault and misconduct in office. But our candidate this week goes out to San Francisco, California. We haven't had a good instance of a white person calling the police on a black person not doing anything wrong in a while. But it came back with a vengeance this week. Software engineer Wesley Michelle was waiting for a friend outside her apartment building when Christopher Kukor demanded to know the name of the person he was waiting for and then called the police claiming that Michelle was trespassing. There was some video shot of it, of course. Mr. Kukor? Whichever it is. His son also got very upset that he was calling the police on this individual. So here's some of that audio.
There's a trespasser in my building.
Daddy, go.
Listen to your son.
Daddy, go. It's the better. I agree with him, Daddy. It's the better.
At Washington.
Let's go. Please, I don't like this. I don't like
He's
this.
Standing in the lobby.
Daddy, I don't like this. Let's go.
So, not only calling the police, but tormenting his child, probably damaging him for life. And then the woman that Wesley was waiting for finally came down, and the son was like, "Dad, you done fucked up."
Hi, Kathy.
Told you.
I love you, baby.
Go now.
It took you so long to get here.
Daddy, look where you've gotten us, and you let's go.
So. There we have it. Apparently, Mr. Kukor is he works for YouTube. So no comment from YouTube or Google as of this point, and he has closed all of his social media accounts since the video went viral. So he will be going up against Ethan Kozak looking for win number two. Brian, you seem to want to make a point.
No, it's actually a question. I don't know if this is. I know you go through a lot of research for Races of the Week. Now, did anybody reach out to Bono or The Edge about this?
Not as of yet,
because this is not the kind of person that I would imagine you two would employ as part of their band.
YouTube, Brian. YouTube.
I thought. Oh,
you might be a little confused again.
All righty. Okay.
It's all right. It's the drinking. Actually, which we forgot to mention, people love Drunk Brian. Last week's episode, one of the most downloaded episodes in quite a while. So we got to get you drinking more often, my friend.
I think that it was, first off, I think the title just says to everyone, oh, I want to hear this. But I think that the number, just the sheer volume of downloads, it was similar to, you know, the feeling that people had on the USS Arizona when they looked up into the sky and they saw what appeared to be a mass of mosquitoes heading in their direction, but it turned out that it was Japanese airplanes that were coming to slam into the hull of their ship.
Anyway, before we get into a Pearl Harbor tangent again, go to the Facebook page or to Twitter. You can vote on This Week in Racism. Ethan Kozak going for win number two against Chris Kuker. So decide who's the worst of the worst in This Week in Racism. I need to get our music ready because we're going to head right into Beef of the Week.
And Brian's Beef of the Week.
And as always, Brian, why don't we get started with you? What's bothering you this week?
Listen, I'm going to tell you what my Beef of the Week is. It's going to come across petty.
Okay.
It's going to come across small in the grand scheme of things. You're not going to be able to compare my Beef of the Week to Pearl Harbor whatsoever. And
really?
I know that
even you
front.
Won't be able to compare
no.
that. All right.
No, I cannot. But it does not in any way belittle the sense of outrage that I felt this past Saturday afternoon.
And why is that?
Well, and this is going to sound a little white privilege-y. And it may sound a little arrested development. So just a lot of things going on at the same time. So I had a cleaning service come over to my apartment on Saturday to give the place a one over.
Right.
Every 3 weeks. I think that's a good amount. You know, I'm not the kind of person to get on my hands and knees and scrub the bathroom floor. It's just not going to happen. So how do I maintain a level of hygiene is I've got a cleaning service come over. And in the meantime, I do little maintenance cleanings, but I'm not sitting there with a toothbrush over the grout. Anyway, so cleaning lady comes over, does her thing. I try to stay out of her way, and she leaves after about 2 hours. So it's later on in the day. I am walking over to my air conditioner, my living room, to turn it on. And I notice that I'm about to step on something that resembles Reggie Jackson's arm.
That's very random to have lying around the house.
Well, not so random if you had looked on top of the bureau that I have right next to the living room window, which is where I keep my Yankee bobbleheads.
Okay.
Now, I have got a collection of Yankee bobbleheads. I would say I have probably about somewhere between 20 and 30 Yankee bobbleheads, all stadium game issued. It's a pride of point. It's a little hobby that I have. I collect Yankee bobbleheads. This lady literally knocked Reggie Jackson to the floor. She had a choice of 20 different players that are far cheaper to get on eBay. No, she had to take Reggie out.
She had to take the main man out.
She could have taken out David Wells. She could have taken out Hideki Matsui. I mean, even Even Gary Sanchez is cheaper. I paid $100 for that Reggie Jackson bobblehead. Now I have to go out and buy a new one. Why? Because she threw out the other piece of his arm that somehow broke off.
So she didn't mention to you at all that she had broken
it. Not one word.
Have you complained to the service company?
How do I complain? How do I say, excuse me, you had a cleaning lady in my apartment and she broke my Reggie Jackson bobblehead. I can't do it. I have no problem shaming myself on this podcast. I will put myself up for mockery in front of the world, but I do not have the nerve to call a cleaning service and complain that they broke my Reggie Jackson bobblehead.
All right. Fair enough. I'm sorry. I feel your pain. I'm a huge Mr. October fan.
It does not belittle the pain and the rage that I felt when I saw the broken bobblehead. I was so upset.
Well, hopefully that pain will go away soon.
Well, only time will heal. What's your, unlike the pain from December 7th, 1941, we in America still feel that, except apparently in the suburbs of Philadelphia where it's all cool and we can just drink kamikaze shots. But that's okay, Ron. That's okay.
I'm glad you're not holding on to that either.
No.
It's good to know. Good to know.
What is your beef of the week? What's going on in your world?
My beef this week is actually with the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police.
Oh, no, 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 no. We need them to protect us at Tattooed Moms.
We will, hopefully. But they have started this this campaign of billboards, one targeting the district attorney of Philadelphia, who is one of the more progressive candidates that we had, was elected in an overwhelming majority. He is trying to fix a very corrupt district attorney's office. He fired a number of prosecutors in there. He has stopped prosecuting a number of drug crimes, seeing as how, you know, marijuana was decriminalized in Philadelphia a couple of years back. He has been trying to balance, you know, there's quite the disparity in prosecution previously. Minorities were prosecuted for similar crimes at a much higher rate than whites were. So he's been trying to balance that out. Apparently, the police have an issue with that, so they're actively trying to find someone to now run against him. But they're also framing it in a way where they want people to support the police and the victims of crime. And it's okay. Like, you can do two things. You can be sympathetic to people who are victims of crime, while at the same time asking for a police department to do better, asking for a police department that has killed unarmed black men at least a couple of times a year, every year for the last 5 years, to do better. You can ask a police department that recently had to give 72 officers desk duty because they were found to have racist postings on their social media pages. You know, you can ask them to do better, but they're going to try and take the angle that they're the victims here just because they're being held to a standard that they weren't being held to before. I find it to be a little disgusting.
Okay. I think that's perfectly I don't see anything petty.
You agree with me this week?
Not only do I agree with you, but it also embarrasses me that my beef of the week was a bobblehead being broken and your beef of the week is social change being stymied by the old order.
I mean, maybe it's best I went second then, because you may have just wanted to just skip it altogether.
Oh, no. I'm fine going down with the ship on this Reggie Jackson bobblehead. And maybe I'll post the photo. Maybe I'll put it up online. I think people need to see
what's going on.
Yeah, there we go.
Also disgusting was the arrest this week of alleged pedophile Jeff Epstein.
Not alleged.
No?
Not alleged at all. He did plead to it. He pled guilty to federal charges in Florida. What was it?
2008?
10 years ago? Yeah, about 10 years ago. Literally the very definition of a sweetheart deal.
Yes.
And here's a man, an American financier, as I like to call them, who, as you can, if you want to say well-connected, this guy is the definition of well-connected. He He parties with Bill Clinton, who has been to his private island multiple times, has flown on his personal jet multiple times, spent quite a bit of time at his Palm Beach estate. The man has been known to also be friends with Prince Albert, Prince Andrew. Prince Andrew. I knew it was close. Prince Andrew of the British royal family, the Windsors, as well as apparently he spent time with our current president, Donald Trump, back in the day. So he's got some powerful friends, was accused a while ago of hiring underage girls, literally as young as 14, bringing them over to his home, having them give him massages while he was nude. That quickly escalated to sexual acts, then would pay them extra if they could bring a friend the next time. And what should have sent him away to prison for life, he was actually able to negotiate a deal with the current Secretary of Labor.
I believe so. Yes,
Jim Acosta. Don't tell me I don't pay attention to what's going on when it involves underage sex acts and pervy wealthy white men. So he said he gets this sweetheart deal, which is completely under the rug, off the radar. Basically, instead of getting 100 years of prison time, which he was theoretically facing, he gets 13 months of jail time, in which part of it allows him to leave jail every day so he can go to his office and work.
Right. So it was actually, initially an 18-month sentence, of which he only served 13 months. And okay. Yes, to your point, he was able to leave 6 days a week and really only needed to spend one full day a week in that jail.
Right. And also, and this is where that deal is, the most outrageous part of that deal was, if you thought that the first part that we already talked about was upsetting, this was even more upsetting, was that the dozens of women that gave testimony on the record, sworn statements of the sexual abuse that they suffered at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein, the U.S. federal prosecutor, Jim Acosta, and his office did not tell one of the women about the proposed deal, which is part of the requirements in our legal system, that you notify the victims prior to the signing of any kind of plea deal so that they can be able to give their voice to in front of the court. He signs this deal, does not notify them, submits it to the court, goes forward, and these women found out after the fact.
Right.
This man literally is the definition of a scumbag.
A lot of credit needs to go to Miami Herald and their reporter, Julie Brown. She started an investigation, the bulk of which came out last November, where 80 victims were identified as having been abused by Epstein from 2001 to 2006. The Herald spoke with 8 of the accusers, and it found that he was really preying on the most vulnerable out there. Quoting from the newspaper, most of the girls came from disadvantaged families, single-parent homes, or foster care. Some had experienced troubles that belied their ages. They had parents and friends who committed suicide, mothers abused by husbands and boyfriends, fathers who molested and beat them. One girl had watched her stepfather strangle her 8-year-old stepbrother, according to court records. Many of the girls were one step away from homelessness.
In his defense, and I never thought I would take this side, this took place in Florida. So if you go to any mall in the state of Florida and you pick up a 14-year-old girl, odds are she's experienced some shit in her life. I mean, if this were to take place in any of the other 49 states, I would say that this would be a case of preying on the weak. This is Florida we're talking about, and everybody has had fucked up lives down there.
Well, also, it currently, it allegedly has occurred at his home in Manhattan as well.
And that brings us to our current charges, which is that he's now facing federal charges for acts that took place within New York State, which is going to be interesting as he's taking the approach that the deal that he signed with Florida prosecutors is, because it was a federal case, covers the United States of America, regardless of the state that the deal was signed in.
And the State District of New York is stating that the only Florida is bound by the terms of that plea agreement. So that's why they were moving forward. In addition, they opened a safe that they found in his Manhattan residence and found, you know, hundreds, potentially thousands of photographs, a majority of them, they believe, containing underage girls. And you got to love defense lawyers, you know, because they were having the bail hearing, and you know, they don't want him to have bail, obviously, because he's such a flight risk. And then they were talking about the child pornography, and his defense lawyer commented, "Well, you know, those photos were from the previous case, so that's already been settled." Like, child porn, you just shouldn't have, regardless of whether you've already plead out or not.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe you just burn that stuff.
Yeah. And here was a quote in 2002, Donald Trump said about Epstein in a interview for New York Magazine, which this is not fake news. This was a direct quote, that he described Epstein as a terrific guy who is a lot of fun to be with. It is said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side.
But today, Trump said, not a fan. Now he's not a fan.
Which is odd, because this was the first time that Jeffrey Epstein was compared to the Vietnam War. Donald Trump, not a fan of Vietnam War, not a fan of Epstein, which means Donald Trump likes to use the power of hindsight to define what he's a fan of and not a fan of.
What was also interesting is at one point today, Attorney General William Barr recused himself from this case because he had worked for a law firm briefly that had been involved in the original plea deal. And then a few hours later, some saying under the pressure by President Trump, unrecused himself. So it'll be interesting to see if the Trump administration tries to influence this in any way. Also, if I may correct something you mentioned earlier, Bill Clinton's team has clarified that Bill has never been to the island and never been to the Manhattan residence. He has only flown with Jeff Epstein 4 times, and all of those were apparently Clinton Foundation events where Bill was joined by other staff members of the Clinton Foundation.
Along with other members of the Epstein group, including the woman that has been pretty much described as his pimp, correct?
There is that.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. You know, he is facing on the low end 45 years, which, you know, at 66 years old, that's obviously a life sentence. So it will be curious to see who he's willing to throw under the bus to try and reduce his sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tend not to like to promote other podcasts, but I listened to a great podcast on the subject. Tim Dillon is Going to Hell, a New York City comedian who is a huge fan of conspiracy theories.
Okay.
And he did an entire interview with a man who was a former CIA agent, or claims to be a former CIA agent. And he takes the approach that Epstein is actually a CIA asset.
Interesting.
Whose job it was to entice these powerful Americans with underage girls to obtain blackmail information or blackmail material to be used against them. Like, how do you control Bill Clinton? He's already become president. He can do what he wants. How do you control him? Clearly, Hillary couldn't control him. So if your damn wife can't control you, how are you controlled? Well, maybe you have photos of Bill with underage girls.
Gotcha.
Similar to Putin's yellow pee tape on Donald Trump.
The alleged pee tape.
Alleged. These are all theories. You know, I'm up for a good conspiracy theory. But what the guy said was, this is, you know, it reads like a classic CIA operation where, how do we get, you know, to be able to control someone? What we do is we entice them, we lure them into something, someplace where they should not be. And now we have the ability to blackmail them into doing what we want. And I cannot imagine Bill Clinton was the only person that was sucked into this.
No, not at all. I mean, there was Gawker back in 2015 published what they said was his little black book. You know, he's got quite the network. You mentioned Ghislaine Maxwell, the socialite and publishing heir, who's really been accused of being his madam. And then Jean-Luc Brunel, who was partners with Epstein in an international modeling company. So definitely potential more implications coming down. Also, as you mentioned, the Secretary of Labor, Jim Acosta, getting numerous calls from the left for his resignation. He was also apparently facing a lot of pressure from the right as well, because a lot of corporate lobbyists and some White House officials feel that he hadn't moved fast enough on deregulation and other business-friendly initiatives. So many people are saying that his time and his position in the cabinet is probably coming to an end shortly.
Right.
I tried to put
Oh my God. Wait a second. Did you just say that you think he's going to resign?
I think, well, the rumor was internally he had lost support of the right. And now, because of this, there's a lot of push from the left. So he probably will be a political casualty in this whole situation.
Really? Okay. I see Trump standing up for this guy.
Well, and you know, and the interesting thing is, you know, you would think that this would be an easy one for Trump to really wash his hands of, but again, he's going to hang on and see what happens.
And what I liked was our attorney general automatically taking the moral high ground, saying, you know, I'm going to recuse myself because the firm that I used to work for did work for Jeffrey Epstein. And then about 2 hours later, he issues a statement to the press saying, you know what, I spoke to the ethics guys and they don't seem to have a problem with this. So I'm not recusing myself. Let's move forward.
I attempted to write a song for this because I thought it was a good Aqualung mix, but I just wasn't able to get it done.
That's okay.
It kind of writes itself like, you know, watch out for Jeff Epstein. Don't go to island. So that's just one of the best riffs in music history, I think.
I give you that.
Brian doesn't listen to the podcast as it goes on, or he would have realized I already talked about William Barr. I might keep that one on the sound effect page just in case we need it. Oh, God. Anything else on this topic, or are we going to move on?
I have nothing else to say because I don't know what you already said. I can't. I have nothing to add to this.
I understand.
Did we talk about Ross Perot yet?
We haven't gotten to Ross Perot. Okay. Would you like to? I know this was this hit you pretty hard earlier today. Of Ross Perot at age 89, former presidential candidate. Brian, you're more of the political maven of this show. Talk to us about why we should know who H. Ross Perot was.
Well, H. Ross Perot pretty much he set the path for Donald Trump, which was in 1992 when he ran for president. He basically stood up there and said to the world, enough with the politicians. They've not accomplished what they've promised to do for 50 years. We need to get a businessman in the White House and run this country like a business. And here was a man from Texas. He stood about 3'8", gigantic nose, which was about 2 feet long. And basically, he said, listen, I've run two companies that I started from scratch. The first one was Texaco, and the second one was Mad Magazine. Odd combination. Those are not two things that I would have normally linked him with. The point being is just the fact that he pretty much got up there and was what he opened up America's eyes to a third party. He broke the mold of a Democrat versus a Republican candidate and pretty much, in my opinion, put Bill Clinton in the White House, because what he did was he took enough votes from the Republican Party, people who sat there and said, listen, we don't really We don't have a lot of faith in George Herbert Walker Bush. He is not our candidate. We like him more than Bill Clinton, but we don't actually believe that, you know, he stands for the conservative ideals as we would like. So they voted for Ross Perot. Republican Party vote gets split. And William Jefferson Walker Clinton goes into the White House. And Jeffrey Epstein suddenly starts providing underage girls. So if you want to think about it, Ross Perot pretty much caused those young girls to be molested.
It's an interesting connection. He also had the highest third party vote since Theodore Roosevelt in 1912. He carried 18.9% of the popular vote, almost 20 million votes, but no electoral college votes. And as you mentioned, a lot of GOP folks still hold the HW's re-election loss against him, given it's Bill Clinton. Who knows?
Didn't he pretty much sabotage his whole I don't want to say chances to win when he announced his vice presidential candidate?
Are you talking about Admiral James Stockdale?
The guy was just a lunatic. And that's when everybody was just like, yeah, I can't vote for Perot.
It was, you know, he came out for that vice presidential debate and, you know, a couple of hearing aids, you know, and just, who am I? Why am I here? And people were just like, what the fuck?
Wait a second. You are two ticks of a heart away from becoming our next president? Yeah, we're not cool with that. So Stockdale pretty much, he sunk Perot's boat, much like on December 7th when the USS Navajo went down in Honolulu, Hawaii.
And also he ran again in 1996, but only received 8% of the popular vote and then just kind of faded out of politics and then passed away yesterday at age of 89. A very wealthy man. I mean, most of his businesses sold for ridiculous amounts of money. His initial company, what was it, ended up being acquired by Dell back in 2009 for $3.9 billion. He was actually Steve Jobs' angel investor back when he left Apple to found Next. Perot gave him $20 million in that. So definitely been, you know, very involved in politics, very involved in finance, but apparently doesn't merit a slow jam from Brian.
Didn't he not also get involved in the 1979 hostage crisis in Iran? Did he not send his own team of commandos to try to free them?
He did actually, yes. He organized and sponsored a rescue. The team was led by retired U.S. Army Special Forces Colonel Arthur Bull Simmons. But the team was unable to find a way to extract the two prisoners. They decided to wait for a mob to storm the jail and free 10,000 inmates. It was a crazy, risky exploit. There's actually a book on it, on Wings of Eagles, and also a miniseries where Perot was portrayed by Richard Crenna.
Which, that actually sounds like, well, I never saw that miniseries. I saw a different one, which was, I think, the sequel starring Michael McDonald, and that was called On the Wings of Love.
I'm not aware of that one.
On the Wings of Love.
This is how much money Ross Perot had. He actually owned a copy of the Magna Carta.
No.
In 1984, he bought a very early copy of a Magna Carta. I can't even imagine what that cost. Oh, man, actually, I can tell you, though, it sold. He sold it in December of 2007 for $21.3 million.
Like, that to me is just baller money. Like, when you're buying historical artifacts for shits and giggles, like, I have more respect for somebody that buys the Magna Carta than somebody who buys a Picasso. I'm not a huge art fan. Are you?
I can take it or leave it. It depends on the art.
I don't get it. It goes right over my head, and it makes me feel like I'm missing something.
We'll take you maybe to the Philadelphia Museum of Art when you're down. Maybe you'll open your mind.
Can I get a hoagie whiz?
Whiz wit.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Wait a second. Yeah. I'll be down in Philly soon.
That's right. As a matter of fact, next Saturday, July 20th, Philadelphia Podcast Festival, Tattooed Moms, South Street and 5th. Come down, see Ron and Brian, and maybe some special guests. We have no idea who might be in the audience that day, but it's worth you coming to check out. We've already got a lot of response on our Facebook page. It is first come, first served.
And you can be our special guest.
Anybody can be our special guest.
If you're listening to this right now, you can be our special guest. Come on down. We are going to, we want the audience participation. We're going to do a live This Week in Racism. We're going to do a live drink of the week. We may do shot of the week. I don't know. Depends how many shot glasses we bring to Tattooed Moms in hopes to sell. For a reasonable price, these are American-made, highest quality goods.
Bring cash. We're not taking plastic that day.
Uncle Sam doesn't need to know what's going on.
Come buy our shot glasses. We'll work.
Jim Acosta already spoke about Bill Burr.
You got to practice a bit, Brian. I don't know. It's just natural for me, I think.
The Attorney General, we spoke about. Fuck Pearl Harbor.
whoa. All right. we gotta stop on the Pearl Harbor. So this week, big win by U.S. women's soccer, beating the Netherlands 2-0 in the finals of the World Cup. Their second championship in a row, fourth total, four wins,
fourth
chips.
Total. I mean, the gals of the United States, I mean, when they went to France this year, it was, you know, the smart money was on the Americans. But I don't think anybody realized that they were going to score 26 goals in one World Cup. I mean, that blew the previous record away.
It did. And big question, or the big commentary coming out of that now, is the pay gap between the men and women's U.S. soccer team. If you look at the breakdown, both of them play 20 exhibition games per year. The men, for every game win, get $17,625, while the women get $1,350 for each game loss. The men get $5,000. The women get $0. For the players making the World Cup team, just for making it, the men make $68,750 compared to the women making $15,000. And then as far as the team pay for the World Cup performance in 2016, or no, I don't think we made 2016. The last time we were in it, when we made the round of 16, the men's team got $9 million. Women's team got I've heard anywhere from $2 million to $4 million. So significant amount less. You have some people arguing the side that the men's game brings in a significant amount more of money. If you want some numbers just from a differential, they're saying France earned about $38 million from this year's World Cup. They earned $30 million total prize money versus $440 million for the men's team in the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. But the Women's World Cup brings in $73 million, while for reference, the 2010 Men's World Cup in South Africa made almost $4 billion. So,
Ron, Ron, you've reeled off a lot of numbers.
I have.
And I'm going to ask you to translate those numbers into English that I can understand. Is it true that the Men's World Cup generates more revenue than the Women's World Cup?
That is correct. Men's World Cup.
By what ratio? What ratio would you say it is?
I mean, whatever 4 billion to 73 million is.
Significant, correct?
It's significant. But if you look at it,
how can you say that? So then how do you make the stand that they need to get paid equally? And this is what I'm having a hard time reconciling. And I understand under the concept of they're both putting in the same amount of effort, so they should be paid the same. And yet at the same time, being exposed to the business world that I work in, I understand that people are valued differently in different organizations. So if you tell me that two people who do the same job, one person generates $4 billion of revenue, the other person generates $72 million in revenue, as a company, I would compensate the $4 billion revenue earner way more.
Well, and again, it all depends on if you look at the situation from a world standpoint, which these numbers do. And what a number of people point out is that the player percentage is actually higher for the women. If you look at the money paid out for the Women's World Cup versus the money it brings in, the players get 13% compared to the men getting about 7% in the last World Cup in Russia. But if you look at it from just the United States standpoint, if you look at jersey sales, if you look at attendance, over the last couple of years, you know, the women have really closed that revenue gap just comparing U.S. men versus U.S. women. And this year have actually exceeded revenue for the U.S. women's team. So does that change your thinking any?
No, it just confuses me. You're throwing too many numbers at me. I don't. So let's rewind a bit.
All right.
Are you arguing that the women should be paid more than they currently are? Or are you saying, hey, these are facts, I'm just putting out the numbers?
I was just putting out the numbers. If you ask my personal opinion, I think that the women should be paid equal to the men. Number
what
one.
What is the...
They're now, from just, again, just looking at the United States teams, they're generating as much, if not more, revenue. Number two, they are significantly more successful than the men's team are. And then
correct.
Number three, you know, I don't know that you can necessarily look at this from a worldwide standpoint, because women have been held back in so many parts of the world. That do you penalize the United States women because women's sports are looked down upon in most of the world?
All right. So you're saying that the women, the U.S. women's soccer team, generates the same amount of money as the men's U.S. soccer team?
I'm saying from what I read based on ticket sales and jersey sales and things like that, that it's expected that the U.S. women's soccer team will generate more revenue this year than the U.S. men's soccer team.
Based on that fact, I think they should be paid more.
All right. Not only that, so does Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
Oh, my God, I love that guy.
He introduced a bill today which will prevent any federal funding going towards the 2026 World Cup in the United States until the U.S. Soccer Federation agrees to provide equal pay to both the men's and women's team. So the bill would cut off any and all federal money. This is on top of a lawsuit that the U.S. Soccer Federation is facing from a number of players, 28 members of the U.S. Women's National Team, filing this lawsuit accusing U.S. Soccer of institutionalized gender discrimination, a violation of the Equal Pay Act and the Civil Rights Act. More than 50 members of Congress have written to U.S. Soccer demanding to know why players on the U.S. team are still receiving inferior wages, working conditions, and investment. So Manchin is going to try and push this bill through, which apparently he put out there after receiving a letter from the head coach for the women's soccer team at West Virginia University.
Okay.
Do you think a bill like that is necessary?
It shouldn't have to be necessary.
Or is it government overreach?
I don't believe that it's... Well, no, it's the government that's paying these women. So how is that government overreach?
I have no idea.
I mean, we have a law that states that if you are a federal contractor, you're not allowed to discriminate in any way.
But are they a federal contractor, or are they getting paid more by whoever sponsors the women's teams? I don't know the answer to that.
I thought they were paid by a U.S. government agency.
But it's the Soccer Federation, so I don't know how they're funded exactly.
I didn't think you were. You probably did not believe we were going to get this deep into the conversation.
I honestly did not know.
You thought that I was going to make some kind of comment about Alexa Morgan doing the sipping of the tea after she kicked a goal against the team with England, and you know that my heart has always stayed true with our brothers and sisters across the pond.
Have you now?
Of course. Oh, absolutely. I mean. One of the things I love about the UK is just that we put a face to the world that we are a team. We are one, and nothing can ever drive us apart.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to see. It seems like a lot of this is really paid for through sponsorships. Anheuser-Busch, Nike, Coca-Cola, Powerade, AT&T. It really doesn't look like there's a significant amount of funding from a federal level.
Well, then we should, if we're going to call these women the U.S. national team, we need to put some federal money back there.
And pay them equally to the men.
Sure.
All right, you're up for that. Let's see, what else do we have on our agenda this week? I think only one last thing we had, our new favorite person, the ambassador of Great Britain.
I thought you were going to pick up on my hint when I was talking about how the U.S. and the U.K., we are one in front of the world. I thought you were going to pick up that I was segueing into this story.
Much like you, I tend to not pay attention to you. I just got Brian back. All right. Anyway, yes. Talk to me about this UK ambassador, Brian, because I know you enjoyed this very much.
Well, apparently our friends in the United Kingdom, the UK ambassador to Washington, Sir Kim Darroch, well, let's just say that some of his internal communiques to the diplomat corps in London were leaked to the press. And in some of the statements, you know, he's providing his opinion to the British government about the state of American affairs and the American government. He went a little far in his description of our current president, Donald Trump, as well as his administration, basically calling it inept. Also described it as incompetent, insecure, and uniquely dysfunctional, ultimately saying that it's a strong possibility that Trump's career could end in disgrace and that it would behoove the British government to maintain a distance from Donald Trump.
I mean, this
did not go over well.
I don't know that I hear that he's wrong. I mean,
but he's talking about our president. I mean, this is a man that represents the stars and bars. This is a man that loves this country. I mean, have you ever seen another man hug the American flag the way Donald Trump did?
I mean, he really gets both hands in there, gets all up in that flag.
Oh, he got into all of its crevices.
And I mean, he served our country. You know, he could be retired, you know, living off his wealth, and instead decided to serve our country as president.
Well, I think the point is he did not serve our country during Vietnam when he got several deferrals from the draft based on his heel spurs.
These things happen, Brian. I mean, if you're got a medical condition, what do you expect?
Well, he wasn't a big fan of the war. Bringing it full circle to minute 24 when we were talking about Jeffrey Epstein, Donald Trump, not a fan of Vietnam. Not a fan. You know what's also not a fan?
What's that?
Breaking Bad fans of the current announcement from Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul. I mean, if we want to talk about the state of faux outrage on social media and people just deciding that they need to be upset and angry about something.
Well, we talked about this in the lightning round this week. Yeah, in the lightning round a few weeks back, we mentioned that they had both put up a similar post on their Instagram pages, which people thought meant that there was going to be some kind of an announcement about a Breaking Bad reunion or a Breaking Bad movie. The actual message came out today. And Brian, what was that message?
That they have joined forces to put out their own brand of tequila.
And people lost their shit. Because
we don't have enough tequila. Oh, my God. People on Twitter went buck wild with their level of disappointment.
You know what else people lost their minds about this past week, which was kind of crazy?
Jeffrey Epstein.
Besides that.
The British ambassador to the United States speaking negatively about the Trump administration.
Besides that.
My lack of attention that I pay to you when you speak during the podcast.
No, it was the fact that apparently Disney is doing a live action version of The Little Mermaid, and the actress that they have cast in the role of Ariel is African-American.
Scarlett Johansson. What?
She's African-American. And people,
but Ariel's white with red hair. What are you talking? How can this be?
People lost their shit. It was a very easy way to pick out the racists on Twitter this week because it was like, listen, I'm not racist, but, like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting upset over a Disney movie and it's genuine upset, this isn't like mock outrage, you've got some problems.
I mean, I would be more concerned about the movie sucking, which I believe is what happened with the live action remake of Aladdin. Like, that was in the theaters for about 5 minutes. Mm. So maybe be more concerned with them making a good movie over, you know, what the skin color is of the person playing the role. And if you
read, I think you're really grabbing.
If you read the actual book by Hans Christian Andersen, like, just you're not even close in the ballpark of what the actual animation looked like. So, you know, if you want to get technical about it, I don't know. People are stupid. That's the one thing we can get technical about. People are stupid in this country. Yes, sir. Sorry, I went on a little tangent there.
Did you read the book by Hans Christian Andersen?
I have not, but I've read articles about the book.
Please tell me. Tell me you never read the book.
I never read the book.
Okay, that's good. Good. I got nervous.
I did not read the book.
Part of your literary campaign of 2017.
I don't know where to get it.
All right.
All right. We may have to retire that riff or I'll get addicted to it. Anything else this week, Brian? I think we covered most of what we wanted to cover. Other than that, just hit up the Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages.
I love it.
This Week in Racism voting.
That's pretty much it.
Give us some suggestions for Drink of the Week. And, of course, make sure you come out next Saturday, 12:30 p.m., Tattooed Mom, 5th and South Street, opening up the Philadelphia Podcast Festival, Ron and Brian Live. It'll be a cavalcade of entertainment, stars, and guests. Anything else for us this week for the good of the cause?
Absolutely not. Don't forget, 7th Annual Philadelphia Podcast Festival, July 20th. Down in the city of brotherly love, we're going to be at Tattooed Moms. Ron will give you the address in a moment. Tattooed Moms on the corner of South Street. And
come see us at the festival. Tattooed Moms at 5th and South. That's all I got.
We're going to bring our own merch.
Hats, shot glasses, refrigerator, and stickers. All right, we're going to get on out of here. We're getting a little crazy. All right, join us next week, everybody. Listen, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'll catch you next week.